I'm Pete Wilson, today taking you back 20 years to when Gloucester Rugby Club celebrated 100 years of rugby at King's Home. We were hearing from Dick Smith, and as I said, his son Ian was captain in the centenary year of 1991. So did Dick have any advice for Ian?
Lead by example is the safest thing. They just get that little bit of local pride going and get stuck in.
It's a great honour just to captain Gloucester at any time really, but with the centenary season it just adds a little bit more spice. I'm just going to lead by example if I can. You know, you can't do everybody's job when you're on the field. Obviously, I have little words with a few players in the change rooms and a couple of days before the games to make sure they're on the ball and know what's expected of them.
What can you promise the King's Home faithful for the 1991-92 season then?
I think it's going to be a very good year. I think we've got a good side coming through, a good blend of youth and experience. I think we're definitely capable of winning the league. That's what we're aiming for this year. It's on a consistency throughout the year. It's just up to me now to get the players motivated and to make sure they're on the ball for every league game, which is very important.
You've been with the Cherry and Whites a long time now. What have been the high moments for you and for the club itself in the period you've been here?
There have been a lot of high moments, really, on and off the field. One that always sticks in my mind was the win against Bath on a Wednesday evening. Also the win against Wasps in the cup run we had when we got to the final. That was a great moment for the players. We went down there earlier in the season, the league game, and got a bit of a good hiding, to be honest. And we were determined we went back to put the record straight, and we did. It's a very sweet feeling.
What about off the field? You say there's good moments off the field. How important is the off the field part of the club?
It's very important to the team, because it obviously builds team spirit. All the players get on well. We like to mix off the field as well, get to know each other, have a bit of a giggle, you can imagine, and it all helps the rugby go better.
Towards the end of the programme, we'll hear about one of those social events, the tour to Cornwall. But let's turn now away from the players and matches for a moment to one or two other memorable events during the 100-year history of the ground. For example, we take for granted that there are floodlights at King's Home. They were switched on in 1967, and Mike Burton played in the celebration game against the Bosuns.
The Bosuns were a select team, rather not as strong as, but rather like the Barbarians, and they were sort of very active at that time. They were playing all sorts of first-class sides. And, we went out there to play a sort of convivial charity style, and it was a game, I think it was high scoring, I can't remember the exact score.
34-8 it was.
Yeah, 34-8. I knew we put a lot on them. So it was a great occasion, that, because no one ever thought, no one really gives credit to Gloucester for what it achieves in terms of its ground and the club and the players and so on. And they've developed all the facilities, the boxes there, and this, of course, was a great thing at that stage to put floodlights on. And it was a sellout, it was a great big game, and of course they brought a mishmash of players who'd never played together before, and as you say, we put a few points across them.
The current club president is a man of the cloth. Canon Mervyn Hughes came to King's Home and Oxford Blue, and at one time was one of a trio of clergymen in the first 15, with Bill Phillips and Kit Tanner.
He came to Gloucester on the same Sunday as curate of St Mary de Lode when I came as curate of St Catherine's, a neighbouring parish. But Kit had played for Cambridge in England on five occasions for England, and during the war he became chaplain of the Fiji, which was sunk off Crete, and the action found that he was rewarded with what should have been a VC, but was eventually a George Medal for saving life. Bill played for Gloucester from about 1935 onwards until the war. He was an Oxford Blue and a very fine three-quarter, who strangely enough played at wing forward in the varsity match he played in.
And it's Canon Hughes who has the evidence I referred to earlier, which suggests that rugby hasn't always been played from the Worcester Street end.
In a citizen report of 1892, we find that it mentions the fact that a fine new grandstand and enclosure, the former capable of holding nearly 500 spectators, has been placed on the embankment at the St Mark's Street end of the ground. And as the play will now run from the Worcester Street side to the Dean's Walk side, which is obviously that originally it ran north and south, it is estimated that accommodation can easily be provided for at least 12,000 spectators.
I wonder how many people do you think would realise that rugby was played at King's Home the other way round?
Well, I doubt whether anyone today will realise, because these details are included in extracts from the Citizen of what was in those days a team book. Every year Every match was recorded and any comments made. And so this extract is from the Citizen of 10th of September 1892.
Tonight sees a first for Gloucester Rugby Club when young Michael Smart becomes the first ever mascot to lead out the Cherry and Whites at King's Home. But in 1954, there was another first with the appearance of ball boys. Garth Cromwell, a former first-class referee, now on the coaching staff with Keith Richardson, claims that he and his brother share that honour.
Well, I believe that we were the first ever ball boys at King's Home. I think it was 1954 when Mervyn Hughes, who was, I believe he was club president then, asked my father whether my brother Godfrey and I would like to be the ball boys at King's Home because they were losing so many balls. So that was our claim to fame.
And how long did you do that for them?
I think it was 4 or 5 years we did it for. We used to be paid the sum of 2 shillings a game. And if you didn't get every ball back when you went in to get your money and sign the docket off, I think it was Bertie Bolsham was the treasurer then, if all the balls weren't recovered from St Mark Street, you didn't get paid. Most of the balls got kicked over the stand and finished up in the gardens in St Mark Street. And then after the game, if any balls were missing, you had to go around and knock on all the doors till you found the garden that the ball was in.
Now, you've been a highly respected referee on the international, national and the local level. What's it like to referee at King's Home?
Wonderful. I think it's every referee in Britain's ambition, really, is to referee a Gloucester game at King's Home. All the top referees love coming there. And if they think that if they can get a good game at King's Home, then they've made it.
In 1933 came a moment that caused City rugby supporters to catch their breath as smoke rose from the Worcester Street area and fire engine bells started ringing. As they looked out from an upstairs window in their sports shop, it dawned on Arthur Hudson and son Gordon that King's Home was on fire.
Fowler was secretary then, and Lord John Sanger's circus was in the car park. A lot of caged animals, elephants and tigers and so on. And it was the morning before the Lindy match. Fowler was up here and saw some smoke coming up. And he thought it was Johnny Stevens' factory, which was a factory making pickles and so on, behind King's Home. It was a well-known Gloucester landmark, and the smell was as well. And he said, Christ, he said, it isn't Johnny Stevens, it could be King's Home. And he went down there, and of course the stand was on fire. They were spraying the top of the stand with some oxidised stuff, and the machine backfired, and up it went. It was a terrible blow. But they got the animals out. Where they got them to, they got a lot down by the meadows, which wasn't built up in those days like it is now. And that was it, but that was a horrifying moment.
Such was the enthusiasm of those at the club that a new stand was designed, built and in use 9 weeks after the fire. Now, in this programme, we've heard from many great players of the past with their personal memories, and we've heard them talk of other great characters such as the legendary Willie Jones. But no programme that looks at Gloucester Rugby Club would be complete without a word about Tom Voyce. Captain in 1924 and 25, he won 27 England caps and was described as the father of all wing forwards. It was once said that the name of Tom Voyce and Gloucester Rugby Football Club could never be disassociated. And Mickey Booth remembers him with particular affection.
Tom Voyce is the greatest man I've ever met. When he used to come on the away trips with us, all the young boys would sort of sit at the back and mess around and so on and so forth and thought it was a bit of a jolly they were going on. But Tom would come and I'd always make sure I sat near him. The stories that man could tell of his career were absolutely incredible. He really was a fantastic man. And I like Tom Voyce a great deal.
You get quite emotional about the characters of the club and Tom in particular. Is that because you have such a deep love of the club or just the individuals?
Well, it's the club, it's history, isn't it? I mean, it's been there 120-odd years now, and Tom said something to me once that when he's dead and gone, the club will flourish. And as you can see, from season to season, we're getting our ground to be the best in the country. It's just history with the club. It's in your blood. You can't turn away from it. I was born 50 yards from the ground, and it's quite natural that I had to be part of Gloucester Rugby Club.
Finally, let's look at the social side that Ian Smith referred to earlier. Like, for example, the Cherry and White cricket team. Here's Mickey Booth again.
We used to play about 4 matches a year, the cricket team, and we had some very fine cricketers. We would play on the green at Frampton, we would play Cadbury's at Frampton, and we would play the Woodpeckers, and we'd also play Gloucester City, who we used to beat more often than we didn't. Our cricket team contained David Ainge, in fact, who some of the older members will remember, who was a very fine cricketer, Eric Stevens, Terry Hobson, John Bayliss, all marvellous cricketers, and then you had the fearsome digger keeping wicket. I mean, it really was a great team. And when we used to play out at the Woodpeckers, we'd have to meet at Gordon Hudson's shop, and Peter Ford would turn up in one of his open-back lorries, and on there would be about six deck chairs, so our wives would all sit in the deck chairs on the back of this wagon, and we as players would shove our kit on and out to the Woodpeckers on the back of the lorry. They were great days, our cricketing days.
And then, of course, there was the tour to Cornwall. I think it's time the King's Home faithful learned a few of the secrets of what Mickey Booth describes as an epic, and that Alan Brin says would test the stamina of many of today's players.
The Cornish tour was something I don't think anybody would live through now. I mean, we always used to be surprised that we were still alive at the end of it. It was just unbelievable, really. We used to go away for 4 or 5 days, and although we used to play games, I mean, obviously it was a social tour, and obviously I can't tell you all the stories that went on, but we certainly had a good time.
So, good times, according to Alan Brin. But that's some music now from Perry Como, and then perhaps Mickey Booth can enlighten us as to exactly what went on tour. So, Mickey Booth and the tour to Cornwall. What is there to say?
Our 3-day tour to Cornwall was epic. We would start to talk about that on Boxing Day. It really was epic trips. And the fun we used to have on those trips, without getting into any trouble, we had some great times on those tours. On Sunday afternoons, we'd have a drink at lunchtime, and then we'd all make down for the beach and take a rugby ball down there. But I can recall one of my early tours, just not bothering to play with the rugby ball with the lads, and I fell asleep in the sand dunes, but all of a sudden, six grabbed hold of me, threw me fully clothed into the sea, and about 3 days before, my mother had given me a watch for my 21st birthday, but that was the end of that. Another little thing that brings to mind was Bob Clues. There was no motorways in those days, and we would go down the A38, and we stopped at Bridgewater on this Friday night on our way down, have a quick drink, and we all boarded the coach again, and about 10 miles down the road, suddenly there was a driver said there's a car flashing his headlights in my mirror. And what it was, we'd all forgotten. We'd left Bob down there, and Bob had a cadgy lift and overtake the bus and get on. And I was in the front seat, and Bob said, "Well, I know you shunned me on the field because I'm on the wing," he said, "but I didn't realise I was disliked that much." And the sing-songs in the hotel in the evening, all of us could do a bit of a turn, and we'd have some great sing-songs, and usually the evening would culminate with John Bayliss singing "The Old Lady Sat by the Fire," and the landlady would just say, "Come on, lads, there's just a little bit of naughty words coming in there," and we'd have to pack them in.
What about Digger's entertainment?
Oh, Digger, incredible man. Always sing the old pig song and all his repertoire. They're pulling down the rose in crown, and people's eyes used to pop out of their head when Digger would do his turn on tour.
Just for a minute, I'll get the note.
Could you give us a note?
Yes, sir. Right. There was an old farmer who had an old sow. Idly do, Suzanne is a funny old man. Idly Dan, Suzanne is a funny old man. Now this old sow, she had to be stuck. Idly duck, this old sow, she had to be stuck. Lassie Murphily, and Suzanne is a funny old man. Idly Dan, Suzanne is a funny old man. Now this old sow, she pulls the cabbage stumps in all. Idly doll, she pulled the cabbage stumps in all. Lassie Murphily, and Suzanne is a funny old man. Idly Dan, Suzanne is a funny old man.
They're a most hospitable bunch. They are a great club. They have a splendid committee. The heart of the game is what matters. They've got great support. They've got a splendid ground with increasingly good facilities. Let's hope the next 100 years will be just as good, if not better, and I don't see why they shouldn't be.
Peter West ending this programme, originally broadcast on the 9th of November 1991. Since then, there's a new stand, new players and a new committee, and players, supporters, committee and others have gone to that huge shed in the sky. But Gloucester Rugby goes on, and long may it do so.